"Do you think they heard us, sir?" said Carrot. "Captain, people in Ankh-Morpork probably heard us. So, where are all the werewolves?"
Angua pushed forward. "This way," she said. She led them up a flight of low steps, the doors to the keep. It swung back slowly. There were torches in the hall, too. "They'll leave us somewhere to run," she said. "We always leave people somewhere to run." A pair of smaller doors at the far end of the hall were pushed open. No handles, Vimes noted. Paws can't use handles. Wolfgang stepped in. A couple of dozen werewolves escorted him, fanning out around the room and sitting down, sprawling down, and then watching the intruders with keen interest.
"Ah, civilized," said Wolfgang cheerfully. "You've won the game. Would you like another go? When people have a second game, we give them a handicap. We bite one of their legs off. Good joke, eh?"
"I think I prefer the Ankh-Morpork sense of humour," said Vimes. "Where's my wife, you bastard?" He could still hear the sound of detritus winding. That was the trouble with the big bow. It was only a quick-fire weapon by geological standards.
"And Delphine, look what's a dog dragged in," said Wolfgang, ignoring Vimes.
He stepped forward. Vimes heard a growl begin in Angua's throat, a sound which would cause instant obedience in many of Ankh-Morpork's criminal population when they encountered it in a dark alley. There was a deeper rumble from Gavin. Wolfgang stopped.
"You haven't got the brains for this, Wolfie," said Angua. "And you couldn't plot your way out of a wet paper bag. Where's Mother?"
She looked around at the lolling werewolves.
"Hello, Uncle Ulf, Aunt Hilda, Magven, Nancy, Unity. The pack's all here, then, except for Father, who I expect is off rolling in something. What a family!"
"I want these disgusting people out of here right away," said the Baroness, stepping into the hall. She glared at detritus. "How dare you bring a troll into this house?"
"Okay, it's all wound up," said detritus cheerfully,
hoisting the humming bow onto his shoulder.
"Where should I fire it, Mr. Vimes?"
"Good grief, not in here. This is an enclosed building."
"Only until I pull this trigger, sir."
"How very civilized," said the Baroness. "How very Ankh-Morpork. You think you merely have to threaten on the lesser races back down, eh?"
"Have you seen your gates lately?" said Vimes.
"We're werewolves,"
snapped the Baroness. And it was a snap. The words sharp and clipped as though they were barked.
"Stupid toys like that don't frighten us.
But it'll slow you down for a while. Now bring out Lady Sybil."
"Lady Sybil is resting. You are in no position to make demands, Mr. Vimes. We are not the criminals here."
As Vimes's mouth dropped open, she went on,
"The game is not against the law. It has been played for 1,000 years. And what else is it you think we have done, stolen the dwarf's pet rock? We—"
"You know it wasn't stolen," said Vimes, "and I know—"
"You know nothing. You suspect everything. You have that kind of mind."
"Your son said—"
"My son, unfortunately, has honed to perfection every muscle in his body, except the ones for sinking with,"
said the Baroness.
"In civilized Ankh-Morpork, I dare say you can barge into people's houses and stamp around. But here, in our barbaric backwater, the law requires something beyond mere assertion."
"I can smell the fear," said Angua. "It's pouring off you, Mother."
"Sam?"
They looked up. Lady Sybil was standing at the top of some stone stairs leading to a lower floor, looking bewildered and angry. She was holding an iron bar with a bend in it.
"Sybil?"
"She told me you were on the run and they were all trying to save you, but that wasn't right, was it?"
It's a terrible thing to admit to yourself, but when the shoulder blades are pressed firmly against the brickwork, then any weapon will do, and right now Vimes saw Sybil loaded and ready to fire. She got on with people. Practically from the moment she'd been able to talk, she'd been taught how to listen. And when Sybil listened to people, she made them feel good about themselves. It was probably something to do with being a big girl. She tried to make herself seem small, and by default, that made those around her feel bigger. She got on with people almost as well as Carrots did. No wonder even the dwarfs liked her. She had pages to herself in Twerp's peerage, huge ancestral anchors biting into the past, and dwarfs also respected someone who knew their great-great-great-grandfather's full name. And Sybil couldn't lie. You could see her redden when she tried it. Sybil was a rock. She made Detritus look like a sponge.
"We've been having a lovely run in the woods, dear," he said. "Now please come here, because I think we're going to see the king, and I'm going to tell him everything. I've worked it out at last."
"The dwarfs will kill you," said the Baroness.
"I can probably outrun a dwarf," said Vimes. "And now we're leaving, Angua?"
Angua hadn't moved. Her eyes were still fixed on her mother, and she was still growling. Vimes recognised the signs. You spotted them in the bars of Ankh-Morpork every Saturday night. Hackles rose, and people climbed up them. And then all that was needed was for someone to break a bottle, or blink.
"We are leaving, Angua," he repeated.
The other werewolves were standing up and stretching. Carrot reached out and took her arm. She turned, snarling. It was over in a fraction of a second, and in reality her head had hardly moved before she got a grip on herself.
"So this is a boy,"
said the Baroness, her voice slurring.
"You betray your people for this?"
Her ears were lengthening, Vimes was sure. The muscles in her face were moving strangely, too.
"And what else has Ankh-Morpork taught you?"
Angua shuddered. "Self-control," she muttered. "Let's go, Mr. Vimes." The werewolves closed in as they backed towards the steps. "Don't turn your back," said Angua, levelly. "Don't run."
"Don't need telling," said Vimes.
He was watching Wolfgang, who was moving obliquely across the floor, his eyes fixed on the retreating party. "They'll have to bunch up to follow us through the doorway," he thought. He glanced at Detritus. The giant crossbow was weaving back and forth as the troll tried to keep all the wolves in the field of fire. "Fire it," said Angua.
"But they're your family,"
said Sybil. "They'll heal soon enough, believe me."
"Detritus, don't shoot unless you have to,"
Vimes ordered, as they headed towards the drawbridge. "He has to, now," said Angua. "Sooner or later, Wolfgang will leap, and the others will take—"
"There's something you ought to know, sir," said Cheery. "You really ought to know it, sir. It's really important."
Vimes looked across the drawbridge. Figures massed in the dark. Torchlight glinted off armour and weaponry, blocking the way.
"Well, things couldn't get any worse," he said.
"Oh, they could if there were snakes on here with us," said Lady Sybil. Carrot turned at the sound of Vimes's snort of laughter.
"Sir?" "Oh, nothing, Captain. Keep your eyes on the bastards, will you? We can deal with the soldiers later."
"Just say the word, sir," said Detritus.
"You are trapped now," snarled the Baroness. "Watchman, do your duty."
A figure was walking across the bridge carrying a torch. Captain Tantony reached Vimes and glared at him.
"Stand aside, sir," he said. "Stand aside, or by God's ambassador or not, I'll arrest you."
Their eyes met. Then Vimes looked away.
"Let's let him through," he said. "The man's decided he's got a duty to do."
Tantony nodded slightly, and then marched on across the bridge until he was a few feet from the Baroness. He saluted.
"Take these people away," she said.
"Lady Seraphine von Oberwald," said Tantony woodenly.
"You know who I am, man."
"I wish to talk to you concerning certain charges made in my presence."
Vimes closed his eyes. "Oh, you poor dumb idiot. I didn't mean you to actually—"
"You what?"
said the Baroness.
"It has been alleged, my lady, that a member or members of your family have been involved in a conspiracy to—"
"How dare you!"
screamed Seraphine. And Wolfgang leapt, and the future became a series of flickering images. In midair, he changed into a wolf. Vimes grabbed the bottom of Detritus's bow and forced it upwards at the same time as the troll pulled the trigger. Carrot was running before Wolfgang landed on Captain Tantony's chest. The sound of the bow echoed around the castle, above the noise of a thousand whirring fragments scything through the sky. Carrot reached Wolfgang in a flat dive. He hit the wolf with his shoulder, and the two of them were bowled over. Then, like some moving magic lantern show coming back up to speed, the scene exploded. Carrot got to his feet and— "It must be because we're abroad," thought Vimes. "He's trying to do things properly." He'd squared up to the werewolf, fists balled, a stance taken straight from Figure 1 of the Noble Art of Fisticuffs, which looked impressive enough right up to the point when your opponent broke your nose with a quart mug. Carrot had a punch like an iron bar, and he landed a couple of heavy blows on Wolfgang as he got up. The werewolf seemed more puzzled than hurt. Then he changed shape, caught a fist in both hands and gripped it hard. To Vimes's horror, he stepped forward without apparent effort, forcing Carrot back.
"Don't try anything, Angua," said Wolf, grinning happily, "or else I'll break his arm." Oh, perhaps I'll break his arm anyway. Yes.
Vimes even heard the crack. Carrot went white. Someone holding a broken arm has all the control they need. Another idiot, thought Vimes. When they're down, you don't let them get back up. Damn the Marquis of Fantaylor. Policing by consent was a good theory, but you had to get your opponent to lie still first.
Ah, and he has other bones, said Wolfgang,
pushing Carrot away. He glanced towards Angua.
Get back, or I'll hurt him some more. No, I shall hurt him some more anyway.
Then Carrot kicked him in the stomach. Wolfgang went over backwards, but turned this into a back flip and a mid-air spin. He landed lightly, leapt back at the astonished Carrot, and punched him twice in the chest. The blows sounded like shovels hitting wet concrete. Wolfgang grabbed the falling man, lifted him over his head with one hand, and hurled him down onto the bridge in front of Angua.
"Civilized man!" he shouted. "There he is, sister!"
Vimes heard a sound down beside him. Gavin was watching intently, making urgent little noises in his throat. A tiny part of Vimes, the little rock-hard core of cynicism, thought, "All right for you, then." Steam was rising off Wolfgang. He shone in the torchlight. The blonde hair across his shoulders gleamed like a slipped halo. Angua knelt down by the body, face impassive. Vimes had been expecting a scream of rage. He heard her crying. Besides Vimes, Gavin whined. Vimes stared down at the wolf. He looked at Angua trying to lift Carrot, and then he looked at Wolfgang, and then back again.
"Anyone else?" said Wolfgang, dancing back and forth on the boards. "How about you, civilized?"
"Sam!" hissed Sybil. "You can't!" Vimes drew his sword. It wouldn't make any difference now. Wolfgang wasn't playing now. He wasn't punching and running away. Those arms could push a fist through Vimes's ribcage and out the other side. A blur went past at shoulder height. Gavin struck Wolfgang in the throat, knocking him over. They rolled across the bridge. Wolfgang changing back to wolf shape to lock jaw against jaw. They broke, circled, and went for another one again. Dreamlike, Vimes heard a small voice say,
"He wouldn't last 5 minutes at back home fighting like that. The silly bugger's going to get creamed fighting like that. Stuff the Marquis of Flaming Fantaylor."
Gaspode was sitting bolt upright, stubby tail vibrating.
"The dafty! This is how you win a dog fight."
As the wolves rolled over and over, Wolfgang tearing at Gavin's belly, Gaspode arrived growling and yapping and launched himself in the general direction of the werewolf's hind quarters. There was a yip. Gaspode's growls became somewhat muffled. Wolfgang leapt vertically. Gavin sprang. The three hit the parapet of the bridge together, knocked the crumbling stones aside, hung for a moment in a snarling ball, and then dropped down into the roaring whiteness of the river. The whole of it, from the moment Tantony had crossed the bridge, had taken much less than a minute. The Baroness was staring down into the gorge. Keeping his eye on her, Vimes spoke to Detritus.
"Are you sure you're werewolf-proof, Sergeant?"
"Pretty much, sir. Anyway, I got the bow wound up again."
"Go into the castle and fetch the resident Igor, then," said Vimes calmly. "If anyone even tries to stop you, shoot them. And shoot anyone standing near them."
"No problem about that, sir."
"We're not at home to Mr. Reasonable, Sergeant."
"I do not hear him knocking, sir."
"Go to it, then. Sergeant Angua?"
She did not look up.
"Sergeant Angua?"
Now she looked up.
"How can you be so cool?" she snarled. "He's hurt."
"I know. Go and talk to those watchmen hanging around on the other end of the bridge. They look scared. I don't want any accidents. We're going to need them. Cheery, cover Carrot and the lad with something. Keep them warm." "I wish there was something to keep me warm," he thought. The thoughts came slowly like drips of freezing water. He felt that ice would crackle off him if he moved, that frost would sparkle in his footsteps, that his mind was full of crisp snow.
"And now, madam," he said, turning back to the Baroness, "you will give me the scone of stone." "He'll be back," hissed the Baroness. "That fall was nothing, and he'll find you." "For the last time, the stone of the dwarfs. The wolves are waiting out there. The dwarves are waiting down in the city. Give me the stone, and we might all survive. This is diplomacy. Don't let me try anything else."
"I have only to say the word."
Angua began to growl. Sybil strode towards the Baroness and grabbed her.
You never answered a single letter all those years I wrote to you.
The Baroness stared at her in amazement, as people so often did when struck with Sybil's sharp non sequiturs.
If you know we've got Sir Scone, she said to Vimes, then you know it's not the real one, and much good may it do the dwarfs.
Yes, you had it made in Ankh-Morpork. Made in Ankh-Morpork. They should have stamped it on the bottom. But someone killed the man who did it. That's murder. It's against the law.
Vimes nodded at the Baroness.
It's a thing we have.
Gaspode dragged himself out of the water and stood shivering on the shingle. Every single part of him felt bruised. There was a nasty ringing noise in his ears. Blood dripped down one leg. The last few minutes had been a little hazy, but he did recall they'd involved a lot of water that had hit him like hammers. He shook himself. His coat jangled where the water was already freezing. Out of habit, he walked over to the nearest tree and, wincing, raised a leg.
"Excuse me."
A busy, reflective silence followed.
"That was not a good thing you just did," said Gaspode.
"I'm sorry. Perhaps that is not the right moment."
"Not for me, no. You may have caused some physical damage here."
"It's hard to know what to say."
"Trees don't normally talk back, is my point."
Gaspode sighed.
"So what happens now?"
"I beg your pardon?"
"I'm dead, right?"
"No. No one is more surprised than me, I may say, but your time does not appear to be now."
Death pulled out an hourglass, held it up against the cold stars for a moment, and stalked away along the riverbank.
"Excuse me? There's no chance of a lift, is there?"
said Gaspode, struggling after him.
"None whatsoever."
"Only, being a short dog in deep snow is not good for the old wash names, if you get my—"
Death had stopped at a little bay. An indistinct shape lay in a few inches of water.
"Oh,"
said Gaspode. Death leaned down. There was a flash of blue, and then he vanished. Gaspode shivered. He paddled into the water and nudged Gavin's sodden fur with his nose.
"Shouldn't be like this," he whined. "If you was a human, they'd put you on a big boat on the tide and set fire to it, and everyone would see. Shouldn't just be you and me down here in the cold."
There was something that had to be done, too. He knew it in his bones. He crawled back to the bank and pulled himself up onto the trunk of a fallen willow. He cleared his throat. Then he howled. It started badly, hesitantly, but it picked up and got stronger, richer, and when he paused for breath, the howl went on and on, passing from throat to throat across the forest. The sound wrapped him as he slid off the log and struggled on towards higher ground. It lifted him over the deeper snow. It wound around the trees, a platting of many voices becoming something with a life of its own. He remembered thinking, maybe it'll even get as far as Ankh-Morpork. Maybe it'll get much further than that. Vimes was impressed by the Baroness. She fought back in a corner.
"I know nothing about any deaths."
A howl came up from the forest. How many wolves were there? He never saw them, and then when they cried out, it sounded as though there was one behind every tree. This one went on and on. It sounded like a cry thrown into a lake of air, the ripples spreading out across the mountains. Angua threw her head back and screamed. Then, breath hissing between her teeth, she advanced on the Baroness, fingers flexing.
"Give him the damned stone," she hissed. "Will any of you face me now? Then give him the stone!"
"What seems to be the trouble?"
Igor lurched through the stricken gates, trailed by Detritus. He caught sight of the two bodies and hurried over like a very large spider.
"Fetch the stone," growled Angua, "and then we will leave. I can smell it. Or do you want me to take it?"
Seraphine glared at her, then turned on her heel and ran back into the ruins of the castle. The other werewolves shrank back from Angua as if her stare was a whip.
"If you can't help these men," said Vimes to the kneeling Igor, "your future does not look good."
Igor nodded.
"This one," he said, indicating Tantony, "flesh wounds. I can stitch him up a treat, no problem. This one," he tapped Carrot, "nasty break on the arm."
He glanced up.
"Master Wolfgang been playing again?"
"Can you make him well?" snapped Vimes.
"No, it's his lucky day," said Igor.
I can make him better. I've got some kidneys just in, a lovely little pair. Belong to young Mr. Crepanthi. Hardly touched a drop of strong liquor. Same about the Avalanche.
Does he need them? Said Angua.
No, but you should never miss an opportunity to improve yourself, I always say.
Igor grinned. It was a strange sight. The scars crawled around his face like caterpillars.
Just see to the arm, said Vimes firmly.
The Baroness reappeared, flanked by several werewolves. They also backed away as Angua spun round.
Take it, said Seraphine. Take the wretched thing. It's a fake. No crime has been committed.
I'm a policeman, said Vimes. I can always find a crime.
The sleigh slid under its own weight down the track towards Bjonk, the town's watchmen running alongside it and giving it the occasional push. With their captain down, they were lost and bewildered, and in no mood to take orders from Vimes, but they did what Angua commanded because Angua was of the class that traditionally gave them orders. The two casualties were bedded down on blankets.
Angua, said Vimes.
Yes, sir.
There's wolves keeping pace with us. I can see them running between the trees.
I know.
Are they on our side?
Let's just say they're not on anyone's side yet, shall we? They don't like me much, but they know Gavin did. Right now, that's what's important. Some of them are out looking for my brother.
Would he have survived that? It was a long way down.
Well, it wasn't fire or silver. There's nothing but white water for miles. It probably hurt a lot, but we heal amazingly well, sir.
Look, I'm sorry that...
No, Mr. Vimes, you're not. You shouldn't be. Carrot just didn't understand what Wolfgang is like. You can't beat something like him in a fair fight. I know he's family, but personal is not the same as important. Carrot always said that.
Says that, said Sybil sharply.
Yes.
Carrot opened his eyes.
What happened back there?
He said.
Wolfgang hit you, said Angua. She wiped his brow.
What with?
Carrot tried to push himself upwards, winced, and fell back.
What have I always told you about the Marquis of Fantaylor? Said Vimes.
Sorry, sir.
Something bright rose from the distant forests. It vanished, and then a green light expanded into existence. A moment later came the pop of the flare.
The signallers have got to the tower, said Vimes.
Can't this damn thing go any faster? Said Angua.
I mean, we can contact Ankh-Morpork, said Vimes.
After everything, he felt curiously cheered by this. It was as if a special human howl had gone up. He wasn't floundering around loose now. He was floundering on the end of a very long line. That made all the difference. It was a small public room over a shop in Bjonk, and since it belonged to everybody, it looked as though it didn't belong to anyone. There was dust in the corners, and the chairs that were currently arranged in a ragged circle had been chosen for their ability to be stacked neatly, rather than sat on comfortably. Lady Margalotta smiled at the assembled vampires. She liked these meetings. The rest of the group were a pretty mixed bunch, and she wondered what their motives were. But perhaps they at least shared one conviction, that what you were made as wasn't what you had to be, or what you might become. And the trick was to start small. Suck, but don't impale. Little steps. And then you found that what you really wanted was power, and there were much politer ways of getting it. And then you realized that power was a bauble. Any thug had power. The true prize was control. Lord Vetinari knew that. When heavy weights were balanced on the scales, the trick was to know where to place your thumb. And all control started with self. She stood up. They watched her with slightly worried yet friendly faces.
My name, in the short form, is Lady Margarota Amaya Katharina Assumpta Krasina von Ubewelt, and I am a vampire.
They chorused, Hello, Lady Margarota Amaya Katharina Assumpta Krasina von Ubewelt.
It has been almost 4 years now, said Lady Margarota, and I am still taking one night at a time. One neck would always be one too many, but there are compensations.
There were no guards on the gate of Bjonk, but there was a cluster of dwarfs outside the embassy as the sleigh slid to a halt. The wolves in the traces jerked nervously and whined at Angua. I'll have to let them go, she said, getting out. They've only come this far because they're frightened of me. Vimes wasn't surprised. At the moment, anything would be frightened of Angua. Even so, a squad of dwarfs was hurrying to the sledge. It had taken them a few seconds to get a grip on things, Vimes realized. There were uptown guards here, and an Igor, and a werewolf. They'd be puzzled as well as suspicious. That should give him a tiny crack to leave open. And, ashamed as he was to say it, an arrogant bastard always had the edge. He glared at the lead dwarf.
"What's your name?" he demanded.
"You are under... You know the scone of stone was stolen."
"You what?"
Vimes reached round and pulled a sack out of the sleigh.
"Bring those torches closer," he shouted.
And because he delivered the command in a tone that said there was no doubt that it had to be obeyed, it was obeyed. "I've got 20 seconds," he thought, "and then the magic goes away."
"Now, look at this," he said, lifting the thing out of the sack.
Several dwarfs fell to their knees. The murmuring spread out. Another howl, another rumour. In his current state, he could see, in his mind's bloodshot eye, the towers in the night, clicking and clacking, delivering to Genua exactly the message that had been sent from Ankh Morpork.
"I want to take this to the king," he said in the hushed silence.
"We will take it," the dwarf began, moving forward.
Vimes stepped aside.
"Good evening, boys,"
said Detritus, standing up in the sleigh. The tortured noises the bow's springs were making under their preternatural stress sounded like some metal animal in extreme pain. The dwarf was a couple of feet away from several dozen arrow points.
"On the other hand," said Vimes, "we could continue talking. You look like a dwarf who likes to talk."
The dwarf nodded.
"First of all, is there any reason why the two wounded men I have here couldn't be taken inside before they die of their wounds?"
The bow twitched into Tritus's hands. The dwarf nodded.
"They can go inside and be treated," said Vimes.
The dwarf nodded again, still looking into a bundle of arrows bigger than his head.
"Capital. See how we get on when we simply talk? And now I suggest that you arrest me."
"You want me to arrest you?"
"Yes, and Lady Sybil, we place ourselves under your personal jurisdiction." "That's right," said Sybil. "I demand to be arrested."
She drew herself up and out, righteous indignation radiating like a bonfire, causing the dwarfs to back away from what was clearly an unexploded bosom.
"And since the arrest of its ambassador will certainly cause difficulties with Ankh Morpork," Vimes went on, "I strongly suggest you take us directly to the king."
By blessed chance, the distant tower sent up another flare. Green light illuminated the snows for a moment.
"What's that mean?" said the dwarf captain.
"It means that Ankh Morpork knows what's going on," said Vimes, praying that it did. "And I don't reckon you want to be the dwarf who started the war."
The dwarf spoke to the dwarf beside him. A third dwarf joined them. Vimes couldn't follow the hurried conversation, but right behind him, Cheery whispered,
"It's a bit beyond him. He doesn't want anything to happen to the scone."
"Good."
The dwarf turned back to Vimes.
"What about the troll?"
"Oh, Detritus will stay in the embassy," said Vimes.
This seemed to lighten the tone of the debate somewhat, but it still appeared to be heavy going.
"What's happening now?" whispered Vimes.
"There's no precedent for anything like this," muttered Cheery. "You're supposed to be an assassin, but you've come back to see the king and you've got the scone."
"No precedent," said Sybil.
"Yes, there bloody well is. Pardon my clatchin'."
She took a deep breath and began to sing.
"Oh,"
said Cheery, shocked.
"What?"
said Vimes. The dwarfs were staring at Lady Sybil as she changed up through the gears into full operatic voice. For an amateur soprano, she had an impressive delivery and range, a touch too wobbly for the professional stage, but exactly the kind of high coloratura to impress the dwarfs. Snow slid off roofs. Icicles vibrated. Good grief, thought Vimes, impressed. With a spiky corset and a hat with wings on it, she could be ferrying dead warriors off a battlefield.
"It's Ironhammer's ransom song," said Cheery. "Every dwarf knows it. It doesn't translate well, but... I come now to ransom my love. I bring a gift of great wealth. None but the king can have power over me now. Standing in my way is against all the laws of the world. The value of truth is greater than gold." There's always been some debate about the last line, sir, but it's generally considered acceptable if it's a really big truth.
Vimes looked at the dwarfs. They were fascinated, and one or two of them were mouthing along to the words.
"Is it going to work?"
he whispered.
"'It's hard to think of a bigger precedent than this, sir. "'I mean, it's the Song of Songs, the ultimate appeal. "'It's built into dwarf law, almost. "'They can't refuse. "'It'd be not being a dwarf, sir.'
As Vimes watched, one dwarf pulled a fine chainmail handkerchief out of his pocket and blew his nose with a wet, jingling noise. Several others were in tears. When the last note died away, there was silence, and then the sudden thunder of axes banging on shields.
"'It's all right,' said Cheery. "'They're clapping!'
Sybil, panting with the effort, turned to her husband. She gleamed in the torchlight.
"'Do you think that was all right?' she said.
"'By the sound of it, you're an honorary dwarf,' said Vimes. He held out his arm. "'Shall we go?'